Welcome to Tell Me About It on WUFT 89.1 and 90.1. I'm Sue Wagner here today with Dr. Antoine Haywood. He is a journalism assistant professor at the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. And why is Antoine here? Because his focus is community journalism and public media is community journalism. So this has been his area of research and focus for quite a while, and he's quite an authority. So Antoine, welcome to the show, and let us know a little bit more about what you do and what you've been studying.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. It is, you know, something that is not, that goes a little bit deeper than just being like an academic pursuit. That's like superficially intriguing to me, or some novel kind of like, you know, theoretical thing to explore. Those things exist, but my background is in doing like civic engagement work, working deeply in communities. It goes all the way back to like me, like in Scouts in high school, you know, in middle school. So, I'm the product of like two public school educators, you know, and so, so a lot of the work that I do in terms of like work being with communities and like facilitating like communication that is needed to help advance like a civil society, like I like to say, like all of that stuff comes natural to me, you know. But I'm very, very interested in the preservation of, you know, some of the work that we have that's done through like community journalism. There's deep history, particularly in the community that I come from, the African-American community, that is, you know, through community newspapers as well, that has progressed on into digital, right? But there is, you know, one thing that's really exciting about what I study is the history of places, the histories of people that you don't find in like the average textbook, or you may not find even like in a museum. But these, where people came together to tell their own stories, they used and gained access to the tools, whether it be a printing press or they got the money together from the church fundraiser to go press the paper, or working on community radio, or working on community television. However it is that, you know, they gain the means to like put their information out there because they didn't have access to do it through like dominant media or what people call mainstream media. That is very, very important, you know, and even in the age of like a digital platforms where it seems like everybody can like communicate and say something, right? There's still a lot to be learned from like what was done in the past before we got into this digital era, you know, and what people did to use to work together collectively to write to educate their neighbors, right, as engage them civically, but also to like and get educate them. So there's some valuable history there. That's just kind of like one aspect of what I do, you know. But I'm also interested too just in like how journalism is being transformed today to be more community engaged, right? And so to be, when I say community engaged, we're meaning that like instead of journalists going and functioning as experts in reporting on like what they think the community, their imagined audience should like wants to know, but really it's like making a turn to say like, no, let's actually listen to the community and see like what they have to say, you know. That's one form of it. You also have the form of it where like in my background where I worked in public access television, that was like my, before academia, I worked in public access TV, community access television, where we taught people how to make their own TV shows. Yes, like Wayne's World or Only in Monroe. but you know, it's there's great power in that where it's like you can, where you actually, instead of the experts, right, these quote-unquote experts that have gone through this traditional modes of learning how to be journalists or so, but where there's like people in the community get to be experts because they are, you know. So you have a growing number of people that are in this movement that's like really starting to identify itself as a civic media movement. There are people in the community, and there's a belief that's like people who are, we say like are ordinary folks, right, they do have expertise, right? They have expertise in histories in their neighborhoods. They have expertise in politics in their neighborhood. They have expertise even in like technical matters, right? And so, giving people who want to, who are inclined to participate and they want to leverage some form of communication to like tell a story or to address a public problem, like let's give them a lane to do that, you know? And so so that's the, you know, the other side of like, you know, I have this historical stuff, but then, you know, there's this more, I guess you would say, contemporary look of like, how do we engage diverse publics, you know, diverse groups into this process of like telling their own stories, you know, through what we call civic media.
And public access is not just television, it's radio as well.
You have community radio, where the one thing that like you, the way that we distinguish like community radio and public access is community radio, it is participatory, meaning that ordinary people can get trained to like be on the radio. And, you know, if you think about the Immokalee farm workers, like here specifically in Florida, there is a community radio station there that's grassroots, it's participatory. You have people who are, you know, working in the fields, the community organizers who are using the airwaves to like communicate messages, right? And so you have that form, but it's still functioning on this like educational broadcast signal, right? Which is being enforced by like FCC regulations, which, you know, means that they can't just say anything. Like it has to be educational. Mm-hmm. Public access, which because it's on cable, is a different animal.
And cable companies are required to provide at least
one? They can be required by local governments through these like very wonky negotiations with the cable company and then the city government, you know, the local franchise authorities. And yes, basically, and the communities can say like, we want to have access to these public education and government channels, right? PEG channels. And so I worked in P, the public access part of it, for like 15 years. And so at one point in time, they were way back in the day, they were required by the FCC, but then it shifted in the 80s to be like, well, local governments now have this responsibility of making it a requirement if their communities really want this thing, you know. And so but what is fundamentally different is that, I mean, besides the technology, it's a free speech platform. Right. And so, and it does operate still under this like this tradition of like a first come, first serve, where if you come in and you want to produce a TV program, then the onus is on whoever is facilitating the station to like train that person or people, group of people to like produce a show. Mm-hmm. But the organization does not intervene in terms of like curating the content. And so this is how it kind of like, it can be considered a form of, people can practice community journalism through it, right? Which we have examples of that. I've been studying that, but it's not necessary. It's not something that happens all the time or inherently, you know, in the public access, you know. So you get people who come in and they want to tap dance on TV for 15 minutes, like that's their program, you know. But then you have people and this is what gets into my study, who use the platform to talk about to do interviews with families that are affected by gun violence, you know, to do these extensive interviews with families, or to use the platform to help solve unsolved like crimes in the community, because people may not have been so inclined to talk to like mainstream media, right, or to inclined to authorities, but you have a producer who is of the community, who has these intimate relationships with other people that have this trust.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
if this person
talking,
is like, I'm going to do a public access show on, you know, and this is in my dissertation, but it's like, I'm going to do the show about these unsolved like crimes in the community. They have that like intimate relationship with people, and there's a trust that's there. So they're like willing to talk to that person. And then there's a ripple effect that happens.
Well, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
We're going to come back and talk more about community journalism and some of the projects that you've done and some of your success stories, which I'm sure you have many.
Yes.
So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell Me About It on WUFT 89.1 and 90.1. I'm Sue Wagner here today with Dr. Antoine Haywood. He is an assistant professor of journalism here at the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. He came from the University of Pennsylvania, but he knows a lot about Florida and a lot about community journalism, which is kind of his focus. It's more than public access. There's a lot more to it, and he's done some incredible projects that he's going to share with us right now.
Yes, I know a lot about Florida because I am a Floridian.
Hey,
so.
We all are. It's cool. It's cool to be one.
Yeah, it's cool to be one. So, but yeah, I proudly hail from Palm Beach County, Florida. I bring that up because it does tie into this another project that I'm working on right now. I've been developing since I started here at College of Journalism Communications. And the focus is on the Florida Photo News, which is an African-American community newspaper that was produced in my hometown, so of West Palm Beach. And it was circulated throughout Palm Beach County. And I've been calling the project Finding Florida Photo News, which is riffing on another book by that's called Finding Florida, right? But the Florida Photo News, we have very immaculate archives of other African-American newspapers throughout the state. But what I have found, to my surprise, is that we don't have the Florida Photo News here at the University of Florida, so or any other Florida institution. So I've been, with the help of our brilliant librarian, April Hines, shout out to her, and my students as well. I have undergraduate students that have been working with me who are also from Palm Beach County. That's the great thing about coming to the University of Florida. I get to work with students who are from where I'm from, which is very, very neat. And so we've been digging into and putting the pieces together of like just is finding the artifacts of this paper, you know. So my family has some, but I've also know people who worked on the editorial staff, and so it's been seeking them out. I think the most amazing thing about this project is that we actually found the most extensive collection of microfilm of the paper in, of all places, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin?
Yes.
Really?
At the University of Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin Historical Society has the paper started circa, it was like 1954, somewhere around there, by Miss M.A. Hall Williams. She was the sole proprietor, publisher of the Florida Photo News. What we found is that there was a project that was done of African-American newspapers, and it was from the University of Wisconsin, and it's actually picked up the Florida Photo News. You know, April was doing some research and actually found it. She's like, Antoine, you won't believe this. Of all places, it's in Wisconsin. And so I was able to have like the microfilm shipped down here, and I'm actually going back up there to the, I got a micro grant from the American Journalism and American Journalism History. I got from those publications, and that's supporting my travel to go back up to the archives and actually do this research on the microfilm that's up in Wisconsin. My big hope is to actually get some support to that we can do a full-on project to have it digitized and bring it back home to Florida. So that's like a huge, huge thing for me, and I'm feel good about it. I feel like we can definitely accomplish that and have that also paired with some oral histories too of people in the community to just share their memories of meaningfulness of that paper, you know, at that time, you know. So it ran all the way up to like the early 2000s. I think it was like 2001 is when it was discontinued. So but you know, there are a lot of people, even though they're getting older, that's the challenge with doing history work, is that we have, unfortunately, people who are getting older, and you gotta, like, there's the urgency there, right? To collect the stories as soon as possible, you know. So yeah, because this is it's a cultural gem, you know, and it's a very important part of a bigger piece of the story of Florida's history, but as well as like our country's history.
That's pretty cool. And you were talking about, we were discussing when we weren't on the air, about Colbert going to Only in Monroe. And that's one example of these TV shows that still exist.
Yeah.
On basically no budget, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but
kinda
yeah.
Like here.
They riffed, yeah. But public access, really, television, those stations, you know, they boomed in the 1980s and 90s. There was like like 2,500 like public access operations throughout the country during its peak. There were a lot more just like public access only channels that existed then they do now. So the number of public access channels, we call them generally, some have educational and government channels attached to them as well, PEG TV. But there's over 1,600 that still exist across the country. So when you put all that together, I mean, it's still a lot of like local communication infrastructure, right? And yes, some of it does look like it can still look a little Wayne's World-y, right? You know, so that's like low budget. You know, you have like people who are uncles or your friends or cousins or just a random person off the street who's working camera, you know, people just kind of ad-libbing, right, what they're going to do. But there's this authenticity to it, you know, and I think, you know, what's one of the things about in this moment where I do appreciate Colbert, even though it uses public access television as a backdrop, like an almost as a prop, but what it does show in this moment is the value of like this, these authentic conversations that you can have on a platform like that, right? And where people can just be themselves, right? And it's not like we got to follow this script and we got to go with this form. So, but there's also a lot of like community building too that happens behind the scenes where, and that's like where my research gets into is to exploring that, like how these community channels, like community television channels, they function as these spaces where they connect people, right? And that's the, it's the non-programmatic perspective of it, right? You know, so people tend to look at the program, they evaluate it from like what we see, you know, and there's value in like seeing your city council meetings, right? Especially nowadays, because we're losing journalists who would traditionally cover like city council, county government, like all of that stuff is super important, right? And we do have, and even here in Alachua County, we still have our government channel, right? And so these channels give gavel-to-gavel coverage of, you know, of these meetings, you know, for the public to have access to. And so we don't have any commentary, right, or analysis. That's what's kind of missing, you know, but there's still this infrastructure there to be built on. And so other part of my research is really, you know, is looking at how these, we call them community media centers, right? You know, how they are serving, you know, and can be even further developed, you know, if we get to a point where we start to have some public interest funding, right? More and investment into these infrastructures like public media too, right? Like NPR and PBS. And but they are places where we can come and we can address issues in like our civil society, you know, and where we can address things that have to do with local governments. We can also use these platforms to like express pride and pride in our local identities, however we're defining local, right? It's attached to a place, you know. Public access, though, it tends to get kind of like sidelined or it doesn't really get seen in this, you know. And so that a lot of my research, I'm connected to a national organization called the Alliance for Community Media. I've been a member of that organization for 20 years. I'm actually going to be, I can't really let the cat out of the bag, but actually receiving an award from them this summer.
So we won't tell anyone.
We'll have the announcement about that. But the Alliance for Community Media is the organization that represents, you know, the existing like public access, public education and government access channels or community media centers throughout the country, right? And when you look through that network and its deep practitioners, and the Alliance is actually celebrating its 50th anniversary too. It's been around since 1976, right? And that you see the depth of people like practitioners who have worked or have been embedded in communities, who train communities how to like produce their own media. They have been focused on covering everything from the town parades to the ribbon cutting ceremonies to like all that really hyper-local neighborhood level stuff that, you know, it doesn't necessarily show up on the big mainstream media, but it's like it's very important to people like when you talk about in towns and in boroughs and things of that nature, you know, and how people have a sense of belonging, you know, and connectedness, you know. And so and what we find if you look at other research is that, yes, we have these Facebook groups, right, where there's like the Facebook neighborhood pages or whatever. There's Nextdoor and these apps. And they do contribute to some of this, like connected how people communicate the information on a neighborhood level. But there's still parts that's missing in terms of like how people engage with that. And so what I've been arguing is that like these community media centers, they play a very, very important role as these hubs, you know, these community connecting points.
Well, we could go on this topic. In fact, could you come back for another time?
Sure.
And feature more of your research, though?
I would love to come
this
back.
Has been wonderful. Yeah. And community journalism is very important. And it's nice to let people know what's going on. So, Antoine, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
And we will have you back again.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Thanks.
That was UF Journalism Assistant Professor Dr. Antoine Haywood speaking about his research and experience with community journalism on today's edition of Tell Me About It. To listen to previous episodes of the show, go to wuft.org/tellmeaboutit or on the WUFT media app. I'm Sue Wagner on Tell Me About It on WUFT.